It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. God Journey.
So you did like a three-way golf God Journey golf trip.
The God Journey golf tournament?
Yeah.
That wasn't a trip. I didn't go anywhere.
You guys went golfing?
Well, some other people came here and then went
golfing. You didn't do it in your backyard, although you could. You got a nice one hole right there.
No, there's not a hole back there. That's just some...
You're doing something.
My son was chipping around back there the other day.
That's awesome.
No, we... A couple friends fly out, played some golf for a couple of days, and hung out. And
that's
had
a good
time.
Weekend.
Yeah, one of them brought his 18-year-old daughter, so she hung with us. Left a nice note, so that was a good time.
That's awesome.
All told. And I'm off this week, head off to Atlanta.
On Thursday.
So by the time people are listening to this,
You'll be in the Georgiatown.
If I loaded it right, I'll be in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, you got a bunch of grief about the last one not working.
Well, the last one we made the apology for, and then I got dinged by some guy who said, are you guys now, like, responsible to feed the flock? And if you don't get a podcast up, then people are upset. Don't you think that might be a good idea for you not to put a podcast up if people are...
Well, that's probably what happened. God probably saw to it that they didn't have their Wayne and Brad fix.
Now, if people need a Wayne and Brad fix, I hope
they really have trouble. They should get prayer for that.
My apology, however, and I think this guy was mostly tongue-in-cheek when he wrote, but my apology was not so much that, hey, we might be a little late getting it up. It's that we put one up that didn't link anywhere, so you've created the appetite without fulfilling it. That's what I was apologizing for. I don't think you or I feel any pressure.
That's a legitimate apology right there.
I don't think you and I feel any pressure to have to do this every week. We actually enjoy doing it, and if people enjoy it on the other side, that's all good.
That's more the merrier.
That's kind of fun. Got a note from one of our younger listeners. I thought I'd read this. She actually had to write it.
Define younger.
Oh, I hate to guess ages. I would say probably around, oh boy, if I'm wrong, I'm going to get shot here. 9 or 10, maybe. 9 or 10. I'm hoping.
Awesome.
And Yella, if it's wrong, boy, write me and I'll correct it sometime up the road. But she had to write a paper for school, and she wrote a paper called The God Journey.
No way.
It's supposed to be a paper about her own life. And here's what she wrote. God sent a very special man into my life just at the right time. And to that man, I will always be grateful. I was fine with church buildings until I went with my family to my dad's parents' church for a Christmas Eve service. The title of the sermon was The Dark Side of Christmas. The sermon told everyone who listened all about how evil men were and how we deserved to die. I was terrified. A while later, my family stopped going to church buildings and met up with a small group of Christians to talk about their faith. We also listened to a podcast called The God Journey. It helped me understand that God is a loving God and isn't trying to punish us every time we get something wrong. And then when Wayne Jacobson, one of the two men on the podcast, was invited by my dad to stay with my family for a few days, he readily accepted, and we welcomed him into our home. Wayne talked to a group of adults who had questions about how to follow Jesus outside of the church buildings. They met in the community center in the middle of our complex. While my parents thought I was playing with some of the other kids who came, I listened at the door to Wayne's conversation. That and Wayne's direct explanations to me about God's unconditional love for me helped me understand God's real character.
Oh, that's awesome.
And she goes on. So Wayne and I also had a lot of fun together. We had wars with rolled up socks.
Sock wars. Awesome.
And very interesting conversations at the dinner table. A couple of weeks later, Wayne talked about me and my family on his podcast. And Yella, we're doing it again. He told the story about our sock wars and made me laugh. Wayne Jacobson helped me understand my faith and showed me who God really is. God sent Wayne into my life so that I could know him more and understand the faith journey my family is on.
Oh, that's a successful little outing there.
That's a school paper.
That's awesome.
That's a paper for school. Her teacher read that.
Public school?
Yeah, I think so. Whatever they do in Canada up there. Which was pretty cool. So, and yeah, shout out to you.
I love it when the simplicity of friendship with Jesus makes its way and connects with a 9-10-year-old that loves God and recognize the previous Darth Vader sermon wasn't right.
Yeah. And I was probably up
that
there.
That place is run by monkeys.
I mean, the gal might be 18 now. I don't remember last time.
Okay,
I was up there. So
yeah.
I'm hoping she's 9 or 10, but I don't know. Got this from Jacob. Love this. He wrote me a couple of times from from Alaska. He's in the Army and was on his way to Afghanistan. He said, hey, Wayne, not sure if you remember me writing you around New Year's. We wrote back and forth just a bit. Thought I'd give you an update. I'm currently in Afghanistan, and I'm so at peace. I can hear gunfire and explosions in the distance, and yet they don't bother me. I was only able to download a small fraction of your podcast before I left, but the ones I do have, I cherish and listen to over and over. God has become so real in my life. He's with me every day as I walk the base. I can feel God's healing touch at night as I lay in my bunk. When my flesh tries to rise up and diminish what God is doing, I can almost hear God whispering his love into my soul. My father told me a story about a group of Christian slaves back in Rome. They were all waiting to be crucified by the soldiers. Talking among themselves, one of them said, "I am so scared. Where is the grace that was promised?" And another slave said, "I will go. And when they come for the first, I will go. And if God gives me grace, I will give you all a sign." The guards came, he volunteered, and as they were tying his feet to the cross, with tears in the man's eyes, he raised his hand and clapped three times. God had given the man grace when he needed it. And when the soldiers came for the next one, every slave raised their hand to volunteer. This is a truth I have found here in this country of turmoil and death. God gives grace when we need it, when he knows we'll need it, not when we want it. I was a nervous wreck until I set foot on the dusty earth halfway around the globe. Stay strong, keep us all in your prayers, and know you're touching more people than you realize. From Jacob in Afghanistan.
No way.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, and you know, it's such a profound, I think, thing to embrace when you realize, you know what, God does meet us where we need to be met. He does give us his grace. But so oftentimes, it's almost like the whole manna thing. It's like, you try to get more than what you need right then. I don't think that's exactly what he's looking for. Our fear that causes us to hoard.
One big thing that God did in our disillusioning process, and the gratefully part of the disillusioning process, was to get us back to living that day at a time. Because most of our fears about grace, about provision, about whatever is, how is this going to work a month from now or 2 years from now or whatever? And God got us back to, do you have enough today? Do you have enough grace today? Do you have enough provision for today? And the answer was always, yeah, we did. The fears were always about what it might be out there, and you just never know what's out there. And so you waste a lot of time being afraid. And grace is really a day-to-day meal. It's not that's that Lord's Prayer thing about give us today our daily bread. And that's really all he's promised. And when you learn to live inside of him, one of the things I think he teaches us is that's enough. It's enough that I have him, not, boy, I got to get that next month or two figured out so I can feel comfortable today.
Well, I love the fact that the Old Testament name for God is I am that I am. Not that I was, not that I will be. there's a present tense living with God in the here and now that it's fine to plan and it's fine to remember. But I feel like God's presence, he doesn't meet me in my past. He's not there in my future. The only time that really exists that has any reality is right now.
Yep. And I think if more people would stop in the middle of whatever it is that's driving them nuts and just say, have I got enough today? Am I okay today? Most, if not all, are going to say, yeah, I am.
Yeah.
My fears are about something else that isn't even here yet.
Yeah.
That may not even come. Or if it does, I'll have a different grace to live in it than I do today.
When or if it does,
yeah,
he'll meet me there too.
I heard something interesting on the radio this morning, actually driving up to your place for a meeting. And the guy said expectations, and we've talked a lot about expectations. He said expectations are remembrances of things we haven't had yet.
What?
Yeah.
Remembrances of things.
No, expectations, yeah, is a remembrance of something that hasn't happened yet. And it says we actually grieve those. Like if you were planning on retiring at 50 or 55 and then travel around your motorhome or whatever, and the economic downturn has happened to you, so now you probably have to wait till 60 or 65, you can mourn the death of something that never happened because your expectations have allowed you to live in something
that wasn't real.
That wasn't real.
Wow.
And what they said was, which sounds really negative, but the uptake was, this was from a secular radio station too. I thought, this is fascinating. He said, the uptake of that means when you're all depressed today because you're not going to get to retire at 55 and you're, 45 today, the reality is nothing has changed today when you're 45. Everything is the same as it was yesterday. It's just that you're, the remembrance of the thing that hasn't happened yet is grieving you.
God. Thought,
man, wrap your head around that.
That is amazing.
That is crazy.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Had a lot of email, a lot of conversations with people that really enjoyed the whole heart-to-head thing instead of head-to-heart thing. And Robert just knocked a home run with that one. I wrote a little note this morning and passed on some of the feedback. But just people saying, it changes the whole argument, trying to get from my head into my heart instead of letting my heart overrun my head.
My head, yeah.
And we're not talking about body parts, obviously. Jesus doesn't really run around in your aortic valve. So there's not a heart here.
Oh, darn.
But that heart being the core of our being and not just the intellectual things we're always thinking and... You know, they're meant to walk together, absolutely, but it's a lot easier to let the heart convince the head than to try and get the head to win the heart. Doesn't
absolutely.
Go that way. That's going down the wrong way. But I got to tell you, last week, and probably all the people from Knoxville were waiting with bated breath, but now 2 weeks ago, I was out in Knoxville, Tennessee. This was a fun group of folks. This is some Southern Baptists who are deciding maybe they didn't need all the trappings that they've had all these years. And this is a weird Southern Baptist church in that the people on the journey ended up with the stuff. And the people that didn't go on the journey went and created other stuff. So they got the building. They've got all the budget needs, the trappings, the service, the deal. And they're like going, how do we go on this journey? And I tell you what, I had a ball with them. They were a lot of fun. Paul Young had been with them in August, and they'd shared some time with him. And I remember Paul calling me from there saying, Wayne, these people need to see you. You got to get down here. I'm going, Southern Baptist in a building? I'm not thinking that's my deal. And I don't know that I would have said yes to that, except that Paul was so adamant, this would be great. They really need you. So I thought, when they got advice, I went down there. And I don't know what to expect, because I don't want to get into all those issues about buildings and structure and leadership deals. But we didn't. We talked about Jesus the whole weekend. It was great. They're on a wonderful journey. They're trying to sell the building to get on to whatever else God has for them. It's more building than they want to fuss with and care for. But
let me get this straight. There's a congregation that has all the means.
Yeah.
And they're wanting to divest themselves of their building.
Yeah.
Because
they realize that this isn't serving their faith journey.
This building's kind of getting in the way of...
Well, the building
how
is, even if they wanted a building, the building's a bit large now for the group that's left, because a lot of people have left.
Huge facility, small group of people.
They probably want to find something to hang out in together, but they're hanging out. I mean, Sunday morning deal was, you know, anybody got anything on their hearts to sing or say? Or one guy had a couple songs he led by guitar, and then somebody shared something that was off of something I'd said the day before. And then someone else had a song, a hymn on their heart they wanted to sing. And this was hilarious because the hymn is, I forget, it was about following Jesus. Well, it must be about 30 hymns about following Jesus. So, and they didn't have the whole professional worship band thing going on. So the guy with the guitar is trying to pick out what he thinking is that hymn. And then somebody else trying to sing what they think
it's
is that
hymn. Version.
So, yeah, at one point in this wonderfully service we had, we probably had three different hymns going on in four different keys. And or 15 different keys.
Three hymns, four hers. And
it was a bit cacophonous, but everybody was trying to find that. Cause it was
very biblical, make a joyful noise.
It would have been a powerful little moment with the hymn going with what the lady had just shared. And finally, in the middle of all that, which it wasn't getting better, everybody's trying to find their song. This wasn't getting anywhere. This guy stands up. I hadn't really talked to him much yet, so I didn't know much about his backstory. But he gets up and stands. And I found out later, of all the people in the world, this is the most unlikely person to do this. He gets up in front of the crowd and just raises his hand. And everybody stops singing whatever they were trying to sing. And he just started with, Jesus loves me. This I know. Before he starts singing it.
Wow.
And everybody coddled into that. And for the next little bit, we rode that chorus together. And it was just a sweet, powerful, simple connecting us again. Yeah, maybe we couldn't figure out all the hymn stuff. Maybe it was a little more complicated than we were at that day. But the simplicity of just that little chorus provided a very, very rich moment. And when I got up a few minutes after that, they wanted me to kind of share some things. I got up and said, you know what? I'm willing to bet there were slicker services that morning somewhere in the world with a better practiced worship team, more refined transitions between the various elements of the gathering so that people are all hooked into it. But I said, I'll say this, I doubt there was a more real gathering this morning than the one we had here, just because people were being real And sometimes when being real means you get to hang your hat in the simple places. And maybe the simple places are the richest places. That simple little Jesus loves me, this I know, which I don't even like what that hymn said, that little chorus says for the most part, because the only reason I know he loves me because the Bible tells me so. No,
there's more reasons than that.
There's a lot of better reasons than that, because he died on the cross, because he woke up this morning in his life in grace. But anyway, the simplicity of that. And to me, that's just a great little parable of the whole, let's make it complicated and maybe make it slick, but then empty of its power. Or let's just frog around here as God's people together and have some real moments. But it's not a great stage production. You wouldn't buy a ticket and come and sit through that service in the morning. But by the end of it, it was very real, very wonderful. I met a lot of new friends in Knoxville, Tennessee. A great time.
Oh,
wonderful
awesome.
Folks. Yeah, pretty cool.
You know, we had a chance to do a funeral over this weekend.
A chance to do a funeral. I never feel
that
way.
That's a weird way to say that.
Yeah, it is.
But this one was a special thing for me, because it was Kelly's grandma, and she was very dear to our whole family. I mean, the reason I say it was a chance is like there was actually a real sense of joy in celebrating her life. You know, she died when she was 93, and as she was getting older, it's like her walk with God was getting more real and deeper. I mean, in her late 80s and 90s on the board of the church trying to figure out how to make it relevant for the young people, I'm just going, that just kind of warms your heart, going like, how cool is that? And our kids had the privilege of getting to know her, but I have to tell you, it was a blast to do a funeral with the sense of, you know what, here's someone who lived a life and lived it well, was deeply loved, and was just solid, rooted in what mattered. And the most often thing that everyone remembered was her just laugh, just a little girl giggle laugh. And we're sitting there at the graveside, and I'm having a chance to read through like 1 Corinthians 15 and just say, you know what, this body that was entrusted to her, we're now sowing back into the earth. But right now, she's not having to walk by faith. She's walking with real sight. She gets to be at the right hand of God, looking at what's going on with a whole new vantage point. And I got to tell you, for all the folks that were there, there's a bunch of folks from the Remington there, and it's like there was a brightness and a light inside them that they were thrilled for their friend who was no longer here, with the sense of the joy of the resurrection and the simplicity of that. It was cold. The wind was whipping. I think I did it in a record pace of like 5 minutes at the gravesite.
Yeah.
And it was just, but there was a sense of God's life and his love for everyone there. And just a sense of going like, wow, you know, it doesn't have all the fanfare. It just had reality. And it just was real.
That's what I think's engaging. When I go away from a gathering of people, I really am not. I've been through way too many performances and way too many rituals of people going through motions because they're supposed to. And we keep, you know, as you read all the church leadership magazines, the whole trying to reshape a Sunday morning thing that is compelling to the world. And it's all about what kind of production can we do.
Organizing a service.
To me, the reality, whether it's, you know, when people are real in an environment, that to me is the most compelling thing in the world. That's what Hollywood can't do. That's what the world can't compete with. It can't compete with just reality. And if we'd center our life there, I know when I go to home group, that to me it's not just we had a home group. You know, we did a little scripture deal, a little worship deal, a lame guitar thing, whatever. But if people were real about who Jesus is and their life in him, then it's a home run. No matter what else may or may not happen.
Yeah.
Reality's the deal.
But you know, it's weird, the whole deal of expectations. You go into a little home group, and if you bring it packed full of all your expectations, you may spend all your time grieving the things that didn't happen, that never really was, and miss the simple reality of what is.
Yeah, often people do. That's true.
And it's like, golly, if we would simply make ourselves available for what is. I'm going to try to script and manipulate what can be.
Right.
But I'm just going to be available to what
that.
Is. I used to do it, too.
I know what that is.
You know, I just think there would be a greater experience of God's presence and life, because I think he inhabits reality.
And it's compelling. Even like this 9 or 10-year-old girl sneaks in the back to listen to a conversation adults are having. I can't tell you how often that happens when I travel around and with people. And so one time I was with a group and they said, what do we do about the kids? I said, what are you doing with the kids right now? I said, well, they're back watching the video. I said, are they? And they said, well, yeah. And then they finally turned around. The kids, and this was probably 7, 8-year-olds to 10, 11, 12-year-olds, they'd been in the back for half an hour watching their parents because a couple of them were sharing and crying and just the stress they were going through is, you know, in this journey and right. the rejection they felt. And the kids had long since been lured away from their video
right.
and they'd been watching for half an hour and the parents didn't have a clue. I think reality is compelling.
It is.
Across the board. This is a good real moment. This is Dan from California. Your podcast, The Grace of God's Doing, I am that person to the core of my being. Listen, I love this. I do not know how to stop. When I do, I feel so guilty. I strive for significance in my works, and apart from them, I feel lost. To actually sit down and spend time with God seems so scary. To look at the reality of who I am and to feel that if he sees that, no, I run from it out of fear that he will condemn me, put out all that is wrong with me, and I will walk away feeling hopeless. Keep it up. You're really hitting at the core of what drives most Christians.
Wow. That's a pretty profound admission.
That's a good, honest moment. How many people just keep running? Because I'm afraid if I stop and find out, God may not like me at all. I had that question when I was in Knoxville. Am I more special to God than other people? I want to be more special to God than your average. I said, why? Why wouldn't it be enough
what's
that
the
we're
competition
all
for?
Special? Yeah. Because there's something going on. God hasn't. That's what I said. She goes, so I'm broken, right? I said, join the club. Aren't we all? We're all broken in some way. But yeah, your desire to be more special to God, that drove me for 40 years in this faith.
See,
it'll kill you.
It's not a desire to be special.
Yep.
Its focus isn't on the relationship itself. It's on the comparative analysis of something else. I want to be more than. I want to be more than Wayne. I want to be more than so. And it's like, gosh, you rob yourself of the very thing you think has value.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I had the darn expectations again.
Remembrances of things I haven't done. Well, that's crazy.
It's like smoking dope, I guess.
Not everybody is so supportive of the podcasts. This is from Todd. He said, really a bummer to listen to your last podcast.
Oh, great.
This was about 3 or 4 ago. This was about the left-handed podcast.
About being left-handed.
Yeah. He said, God uses structure in his relationships. Michael the archangel, not Michael the left-handed angel. John the Baptist, the forerunner. Structure in marriage. Interesting enough, the one relationship.
Is forerunner a structure?
Said, interesting enough, the one relationship that has weathered all seasons, your marriage. I know many horrible things have come through structure and organizations, but good does come too. I enjoy much of your podcast, and it helps me think through my walk with Christ. I love the shack, and I'm enjoying So You Don't Want to Church Anymore, but not really taken by the left-handed thing. Or so he wrote then. A couple of days ago, I had an email from Todd that said, hey, sorry I went off on you. Yeah, so I went off on you. God's dealing with me about some things. And I didn't think it was all that negative in the first place. I appreciate the fact that Michael's not necessarily the left-handed angel. But I think you misunderstand the point if you think it's like there shouldn't be any structure at all. I don't think you and I advanced that notion.
No, a body has a skeleton upon which everything else hangs. There's nothing wrong with structure, but form follows function.
Is supposed to.
Life. For life?
Yeah.
For concrete is different, all right? But form follows function. If it's not functioning, if the form you're stuck in becomes a hindrance to the very thing that you're doing, so oftentimes people that are thrusting forth, we need this structure in this organization, because the relationships surrounding it are messy.
Well, David.
I don't know that structure alone is going to solve that.
Well, David says more. He said, this is after the same podcast about being left-handed. Well, then what shall we do? Get rid of all the structures altogether? Being all spiritual? Like a human being, get rid of the messy body and you'll be all spirit? But there is a downside to the spirit you approach. You have no interactive presence in the world. We call those spirit human beings commonly dead, while they're pretty much alive, but they lack an interactive presence in this world, don't they? He's talking about the structure.
So if you don't have a structure, you can't react to this world?
That's what he's saying. That's also true for your brand of all spiritual Christianity or following Jesus or whatever you call it. You have no presence in the world. Really? I have no presence in the world? So Son of a gun. I think I'm sitting right here and got a presence. Well, you do have, actually, but mostly because you utilize institutionalized forms. Even your website is an institutional one.
It is.
When you hold a seminary or preach, when you hold a seminar or preach, how often do you make use of established places maintained by the...
You don't what often.
What I sense you look down on a bit, the institutionalized church. And please don't forget, a house church meeting regularly is an institutional entity as well.
It is.
And please don't and church might be messy, but there is no other way to reach the world with the gospel. You need forms, regularity, good input for quite a time. Otherwise, the message couldn't be absorbed. It will make no dent. It's hard to take that seriously. Man, the guy's got issues. I bet this guy's a pastor. What do you bet?
I don't know. You know what? The truth is I meet more pastors who I don't think are stuck on the form. I think it's the fact that the people... They don't know what in the world to do. They have an expectation of how it's always supposed to be done. And when it doesn't conform to their expectation, they don't know what to do.
And they fire the pastor and get somebody who will.
Yeah, they don't know how to engage in what is the routine and the tradition that has been handed down, as opposed to just the genuineness of the life that may or may not be happening.
Yeah. And there's a couple of things in this letter that I wanted to respond to. In fact, did back to him, actually on our blog. The idea that we are totally against structure, which we're not.
No.
I make no bones about the fact that I'm sometimes in institutional places, and often whenever, if I've traveled somewhere, I am with a group of people that had a structure about getting together, whether it was in a home, it was a time, a date, a facility, whether we brought meals, people brought food, whatever. My life has structure to it. My marriage has definitely a lot of structure to it. I don't think we're sitting here saying we're anti-structured people. I think what we're saying is sometimes if structure is all you have, if structure has replaced relationships,
structure is not the same thing as life.
No, it's not.
You know, structure can serve life, but structure is a very poor substitute for life. And I think at times it really is a function of what you're trying to do. When I say that form follows function, you know, hey, if I wanted to teach a number of principles and my main issue was I was wanting to have a more one-way directed conversation where I communicate and disseminate information, well, a lecture hall is a very effective place in which to transmit that information to people. But that's not the place that it's going to be applied and worked out. Normal, regular, unstructured daily life is a far better way to have the outworking of those principles applied to an individual's life, which is like it's going to be pertinent to that individual person. That same set of circumstances isn't going to be the best application for somebody else.
Yeah, and if we say the only presence we have in the world is if you meet in a building on Sunday morning, that without that, the church has no presence in the world.
You know what that is? Is those are the only validated by the religious powers places.
Right, and that's the only ones they see.
Right.
I always had that. Even when I was a pastor, I had this struggle. We're trying to figure out, and we'll go through all these programs, spend money, hopefully to get maybe 4 unbelievers to join us on a Sunday morning that we might impact the world with the grace of Jesus.
You could meet 4 right at Starbucks just ordering a coffee.
That's what we said, saying this. How many unbelievers do we intersect with all week long, just going through the normalcy of our day? If we're just aware of what God's doing, it doesn't mean shove a tract in everyone's face. That's the last thing that it means. But it means we have presence in the world. That's how Jesus lived it. He didn't live it by, well, I got to go to Jericho and let me go and start me a little prayer rally down at the Hippodrome. He came to town with no plans at all and picked some greedy guy in a tree and said, let's go have lunch together. Now, there's structure to that. They ate something. They were in somebody's home.
Yeah, but having a meal is not the kind of structure what they're talking about. To me, when everyone harps on the whole structure thing, what they're really wanting is, it seems like, some efficiency of how to deal with all these things. It's like the Industrial Revolution. It's like, okay, I don't want to just make individual cars. I want an assembly line so I can make a lot of cars. And it's like, you know what? I don't really...
Which is good for bringing the price down on cars.
Yeah, but I don't see that as... Jesus seemed to forsake the big crowd is always paying attention to the anomaly, the little one person. And everyone else was seeing that as an interruption, and he was seeing it as the main deal.
Yeah, I think my point there is that, yeah, you can do that to make cars cheaper. Put them on an assembly line. What we've demonstrated for 2,000 years is you don't make good followers of Christ putting them on an assembly line. That's what we've come to see. If you could look at my email.
There ain't no Model T.
My inbox for email. Every day there's letters. Now that, you know, he loves me and so you don't want to go to church anymore, getting out there to a wider crowd, Walmart just ordered a bunch of them and they're just kind of tracking with a different crowd. I get all kinds of email from pastors, elders, Sunday school teachers, 30, 40 years, been actively involved as a leader in one of those structures, saying to me, I don't have a clue who God is. I don't know that he loves me. They're like this Dan who wrote us and said, I keep so busy because I'm afraid if I stop, I'll have no worth to God. My worth is in the doing of all those things. And they're wanting something more real.
You know what's so amazing about that? Is one, it's a profound admission of what the guy's doing.
Dan's letter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's running away from the very thing that I think he perceives as his motivation for getting, it's that acceptance to God. I won't sit still to find out how it actually is. I'll get busy because I'm afraid, not of what really is, I'm afraid of that he won't accept me. It's like, how will you ever know? In all your activity, how will you ever know? I mean, it's sort of like a dog chasing a tail going like, well, when you catch it, what do you do with it? They haven't thought that went through.
Yeah. Although my dog got a rabbit and that was it. It had no second thought about what to do with it. That was horrible. Oh, boy. This is from a brother in Germany. And he's on a good journey, I think. He's been a missionary church planter guy in Germany for a number of years, senior pastor of a congregation. Been reading So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore, which is called The Call of the Wild Goose or something in German. The Cry of the Wild Goose. And he wrote this. He said, I devoured both of the Jake book, as we call it, and Neil Cole's Organic Church in the last weeks, as well as the first seven God Journey podcasts. And now I'm going through the transition series from Lifestream, also in the Germany area of the God Journey, trying to connect with others in the Bavarian Munich corner of the country. And he talks about they've got five couples that are kind of growing and living together. But he talked about the difficult passages of church leadership. I thought this was hilarious because that was what the email was talking about, the hard passages regarding church leadership. I thought, gee, what are those? What are the hard passages? Here's his question. He says, none of my efforts to search through the podcast or material on Lifestream have led me to anything concrete. And so my question is this. There's a lot in the New Testament about this group who were selected, Acts 14:23, referred to for wisdom, decisions, and credit with authority in what they say, elders, apostles, those types. They are to be respected, according to 1 Timothy 5:17, and are charged with shepherding function, 1 Peter 5:12, etc., etc. In all these years, I'm quite sure that a lot has been said, written, blogged about these texts and topics, but I have yet to ferret them out. Can you put me on the trail? And I thought, well, rather than put him on the trail, and there are stuff. You can go to Frequently Asked Questions. I've got an article on leadership in the relational church. There's much we've talked about, but this is the question. I'm probably getting this two or three times a week now from people, so I thought, let's take it on here a little bit.
Okay.
Because people read this going, okay, there was this group of people that was selected, made decisions, had wisdom, given authority, had a shepherding function, shepherding. What do you do, and this is one lady asked it this way the other day, if there are no local congregations, how can any of those scriptures be fulfilled?
That's to say that God doesn't have any people in that area with wisdom and some knowledge and maturity that have their own sense of purpose and function that they're to give their lives to the upbuilding of others. See, the thing that's so strange to me is I know a bunch of men that I would say, you know what, if there ever were such a people like what's being described there, I know a bunch of them. But they're not clamoring for a position. They're not looking for recognition for a title. They're simply investing themselves in the lives of other people because of their own sense of responsibility, not because of an institutional job description, not because of this ministry that they have to got to support and validate. They're just living their life involved in the lives of other people. And they don't seem to be struggling with the structure question.
And I think we said that even a couple of weeks ago. The people I know who live this journey best live that relationally. The people I know who are apostles and elders in the family in given areas, and if you were in that area and you said, gosh, do you guys have any elders around here? I know any one of two dozen people that are going to say, well, you could talk to this person, and this person. They're known for the depth of that, but they don't have a business card with elder on it. They don't draw a salary from the group of people.
They're not going to the latest apostolic conference.
And I think that's when we talk about thinking outside the box. The congregational model is a model. I know some pastors who really put equipping of the congregation above their own position and role authority. Some of these things can be lived out in traditional congregational settings. I've said that over and over again.
Yeah, if that works for you, great.
Yeah, I get emails now 3 or 4 times a week where church eldership teams are studying So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore, going, what can we learn from this that will change the way we meet and engage each other? And I think that's a great journey to go on. But what you're saying, when that's the only way we see it, now we're limiting the way God works. God can work to a congregation. But when you get in, there's a whole group of folks around Dublin. We did the podcast with them, maybe two and a half years ago, maybe 3 years ago now, who just have lived this life relationally for 30 years. You go among them, you know who the teachers are, you know who the apostles are, you know who the men and women who've been on this journey and can help others. They facilitate things happening from time to time, but it's not at all what the traditional congregation does in terms of a hierarchy and forming things up and having a program doing the same thing every week and trying to figure out how to get people involved. They really live as equippers on the planet. I read these scriptures now where I used to go, boy, that's a problem. These scriptures, how are we going to fulfill those? And I look and go, I don't know how you fulfill those scriptures in the congregational setting. It's much more complicated to pull the real out of all those expectations and job descriptions and role money exchanges and salaries. It's much more difficult to live that reality. You can shepherd, which, you know, a good shepherd, I think what 1 Peter 5 is talking about, those who shepherd the flock of God among you, are those that have lived enough of their own journey that they don't have to be absorbed in themselves every day. They can look out and say, man, who needs lunch today? Or who needs a phone call to encourage them? Or who can come over for dinner tonight so that we can be a part of their life and journey? That's what it means to shepherd the flock of God. Yeah. It doesn't mean get a big stick and beat him over the head.
And, you know, the beautiful thing about that verse in 1 Peter is, it's be shepherds of God's flock willingly, not under compulsion.
Not for financial gain.
And you just go like, you know, it's. Do you do that function because it's your job? It's a job description? You get paid a salary? See, I think the thing that I recognize, and I'll indict no one but me, those issues were far more important to me as I was climbing the professional ranks of the religious establishment, and I was trying to understand the sphere of my own authority. I wanted to know, where did I fit within this whole thing?
Absolutely.
And so I wrestled with these. And now that I have nothing to do with that, I really have nothing to do with the concern of the – it's – you know what? I still – if I had authority back then, if – I have far more today, but feel far more free in the exercise of just being myself without having to force my conclusions on anybody else. I think the fruit out of my life now, as far as the investment and the upbuilding of other people in their lives, is far more today than it was back in the official role and job description.
Oh, absolutely.
Doing.
I will say that forget the podcasts, forget everything I have on the web, forget books and tapes that are out there. I do more quote unquote shepherding God's people on a weekly basis, just living my life near my neighbors and people I come in, than I ever did as a pastor.
Yeah, it's too busy on his pastor.
My time as a pastor was totally consumed with the next program, getting volunteers for this, separating two women, killing each other because somebody brought a sick kid to the nursery. My time was totally filled with all that stuff. I didn't do the shepherding the flock of God. I managed a program. And that's why I've said, and I'm not burn down the institution, everybody get out. I've never said that. I don't even believe that would be healthy. It'd just be jumping out of one pond into another pond. But I have said this to many pastors. You don't know what you can't see because you have lived in that environment so long. You interpret every scripture as if it only applies here. If you could take a 2-year sabbatical, go get a real job, live your life, don't go to one of those things, it's amazing what you'll know 2 years later that you don't know now. And I say that from experience. I didn't leave willingly. I got kicked out. Absolutely. Yeah. But in being outside of it, I began to find out most of what I believed didn't carry the weight of reality.
No, it was very much serving and self-serving my own mindsets and establishing of my authority, my sense of security,
ego,
everything.
Ego, income stream, the whole thing.
And I look at it now and it's like, gosh, it and again, this is where I don't want to just as a leg sweep indict others, but when I didn't have a sense of security about who I was and what he had called me to, the first place you turn to is I want some sort of external way to establish that. What's my title? Define my role. Where do I fit within the hierarchy of those who are valued within this? And it's like it presupposed that if I didn't know it internally, somehow trying to get a handhold for it externally was the way in which that was going to be answered. And then we could apply that to everyone else.
What was the only way we knew to do it?
Yeah.
If you were hungry for God and wanted to help the body of Christ, you climbed the institutional ladder. You just did. You became a youth worker, a pastor, a leader, an elder. That's how you blessed the kingdom of God. And we thought all the things that we were doing were absolutely germane. And not all of it was irrelevant. There was a lot of care that went on for people, a lot of loving that went on. But overall, most of the effort, I'll say hands down, most of my effort was consumed by institutional needs that had nothing to do with equipping people and helping them live to follow Jesus. It didn't have that at the
time. Yeah, we're trying to make our deal successful.
Now, I know congregations who do it better. So please hear us if you haven't heard us before now. And first of all, there are not a lot of scriptures that deal with leadership. There are about 17 of them. That's not a lot in the whole of the New Testament. The New Testament is primarily about living the journey. It's not finding a leader to follow. But it is about recognizing that there are different functions and different giftings. And yeah, there are people further down the road that can give you a hand up when you need it. And that's all good. It's all great stuff. But those things don't require the managed congregations that we have today with the little building and sign on the corner to be validated or to be real. In fact, in many of those places, the effort that is expended actually takes us away from the reality. That's what I came to. There's a realness to helping people grow in Christ and follow him. I was missing that because of all the institutional trappings I had to fight. Are they all wrong? No. A lot of structure is valuable in a lot of ways, but it's not the end all.
But there is one aspect that I don't think we've touched on. I think so often in the dialogue around structure and leadership stuff, it's the validating of a few and the profound limitation set on a whole bunch of others. You don't see an organization that validates just a couple all of a sudden seeing this multiplied massive release of an army. You see the performance of a few. And I look at, you know what?
And the adoration of thousands.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I look at it, it's like, if you wanted a body functional, I wouldn't just appoint one cell to do the work of everything. That's how you exhaust and just drain life out of something. In our local congregations, the validated role and position of leadership, that guy gets all the life sucked out of him while everyone sort of expects, if I just loved you, but you're not the official guy, that's not really as important. If the official guy loves me, then it means something. And it's like, I'm pretty sure whatever those verses meant, it didn't want that residual effect of an inert body that is waiting for a few pieces to do the whole work.
Except that it's easier to control if only a few pieces are doing that. So I do think in some ways that was overt. But God's called us all to live as his people on the earth and to be and wherever God's called you. I was with some people in a home a while back, and they were taking me to the airport afterwards. I looked at them and I said, you guys, it was a couple, you guys are pastors. And they're not. They do floor covering work. They have a floor covering business. I said, you guys are pastors among these group of people you hang out with. Pastor them well. And they knew what I meant. Don't own them. Don't start a club. Don't do all. Just love them the way you're loving them and helping them get this journey so they can grow on in faith. And they're already doing that.
Yeah.
Just keep doing it. And when you they haven't been to seminary and they're not getting salary from it. They're not even going to a brick and mortar building. So how can they be pastors?
They just are.
Yeah. They just are.
Traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.